This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Good morning, everyone. This is Denise from CAB, and I have two colleagues with me today. I have got Wendy and Diana.
Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Denise.
Just talking about this cold weather out there, and also some of the things today that we're mentioning are things that are pretty up there. We know that it's, as well as the weather being cold, circumstances for some people are pretty dire at the moment. So we have a few things that come through from National Office, things that they're focusing on at the moment, and over the past month or so there's been a few financial issues. Also looking in our day book, I see that we've had issues where we've had a client who's been medically retired from work, and they needed to see our lawyer because they'd been stood down from WINS for 2 months and no funds for anything. Another one where they'd finished work due to ill health. She'd been waiting for an endoscope, has a medical certificate. MSD stood her down for 2 weeks due to the final pay. She had to use her final pay for car repairs, and now she's desperate for food and money, for money and food. Another one where someone was wanting to contact People's Advocacy. They'd been medically stood down for work, but MSD had said that they can't have a benefit until September. Another one where a client had applied for a sickness benefit, but had been not told, but had been told that she stood down until August, and she's now in the situation that she only had $100 left to pay rent and food. Another one where a client had a shoulder injury for the past year, still unable to work. ACC had been paying compensation, but now stopped that, and so they were waiting for a decision, and they had been working with Fairway review process. So, you know, you can see that things are pretty dire out there for some people.
Very much so, very much so. And my topic today will be, I'll be talking about the Child Support Act of 1991 and giving you a little bit of background about that. Because we do have quite a few inquiries, Denise, don't we?
We certainly do,
Diana,
yes.
You would have noticed a few too coming through. Nothing that can't be sorted, but it does... it can be quite a challenging time for those parents.
Those processes,
yes, and there is a process to follow. Yes.
So I'm going to start with being made redundant and how the benefit is worked out. The first thing is, if you take voluntary redundancy because you or another employee are going to lose their job. If you stayed, there's no mandatory 13-week non-entitlement period. So if a decision is made against you and you want to review the decision, if you think that your entitlement has not been worked out the way it should be, you can contact Work and Income and they'll take your details and they'll call you back for the situation. So, you know, often in a situation like this, there's quite time waiting on the phone, but you can leave a number and they will call you back. The thing to remember is, if you're going to appeal a decision, you need to do it within 3 months of the decision, and you can do it in writing or you can complete a form. So how does MSD work out your final date of employment and your stand down period? What they do is that they look at the date that you started receiving a benefit payment. The date that you start receiving your benefit payment is based on your final day of employment in an income assessment. So when you're made redundant, your final pay may include payments which would affect your work and income payment. And they calculate your last day of employment. They look at payments such as holiday pay, sick pay, long service leave, payment in lieu of notice, and retirement payments. So this is all worked out to work out your last day of payment and when you are entitled to a benefit from. So it's important to note that your redundancy payment is not part of the calculation for your final day of employment. So, you know, two different things to look at there. For stand-down periods, most benefits include a stand-down period. So this is, you know, where those situations that I talked to you about before. So a stand-down period is a time when you don't receive a payment and is calculated based on your income. So stand-down periods are usually for 1 to 2 weeks after your entitlement date, depending on your income. So, you know, if you're paying rent, if you're thinking about food, etc., it's a matter of working those payments through. And once your stand-down period is calculated, your payment should start 1 to 2 weeks after your entitlement date, depending on your stand-down. So the first payment should be in your account 1 week after the last day of your stand-down period. So just as I said before, your redundancy pay is considered income and so will affect the length of your stand-down, which shouldn't be longer than 2 weeks. Just remembering that you must be eligible to receive a benefit. To receive a job seeker benefit from work and income, you must meet the eligibility criteria. And this was a situation that I actually was advising a client about on Friday. So one of the other things to consider is that some people get a little bit agitated and they end up getting themselves trespassed from work and income. Now, this can be an issue. How are you going to get your benefit issues sorted if you've been trespassed? Well, the first thing would be to contact Work and Income, again, using that 0800 number, 0800 559 009, or using your online service, My MSD, or writing to them and posting to your local service centre, or appointing someone else to work to visit Work and Income on your behalf. So that might be just for on a short-term basis, or it could be on a long-term basis. So yeah, this would be like your agent. So how are you going to choose someone to be your agent? Well, obviously it needs to be somebody that you can trust, somebody who can support you. It could be a person or it could be an organisation. They need to be at least 18 years old, or sometimes in a relationship, it could be a partner if they are younger. So when you choose your agent, think about how long you've known that person. As I said before, if you trust them, and if they will always tell you what they're doing. So, you know, it could be a family member, it could be an organisation that cares for you, or it could be an advocate.
Denise, one of the things that I found, and I'm a relative newcomer to Citizens Advice, I had to ring Work and Income on behalf of a client, and it was a long wait on the phone. It
certainly
was over
is.
An hour listening to the music. Yep. So that's quite a challenge for some people, and I guess really all I can say is you just have to hang in there and find something else to do while you're waiting for them to answer.
Absolutely, and hence where people get agitated.
This is where
some of the strife
comes in. Yes, it does. It does. You know, they usually, you know, when they ring these departments, you know, they want an answer. They're hoping for an answer fairly well straight away. Mm. And then when they've got to wait for it, of course, then they become a little bit more agitated or a bit anxious.
But having got through, having done the wait, they were very helpful.
Yes.
And
I don't know another way around it myself.
No. Yeah. And I think that this is the situation where maybe you or somebody who's working with you could consider, is it better to have an agent working for you if you've got very agitated? An agent may be just somebody on a short-term basis, or it could be somebody on a long-term basis. Mm. And if it's a long-term basis, then you need to go through a proper application for that agent. If it's just a short-term basis, it's a matter of somebody who can access your personal information, and you need to be giving them the rights to be able to do that. And just another couple of things just to be aware of in this timing. this age that we're living in, three things to be considering. Like, can a business refuse to take cash as payment for goods? Well, yes, they can do, but they need to tell you that in advance. So a business can refuse to accept cash, but that if you're paying off a debt, then they must accept cash. So, you know, two different things there. Mm. If they've got a sign that says we don't accept cash, then that's part of the deal. But if you're paying off a debt, they must accept it. Must accept cash.
Yes, it's becoming more and more difficult now too,
yes,
isn't it?
Yep.
If we've got cash, we want to... It's still legal tender.
It is still legal tender. Mm. And certain things to remember about that, there are rules about paying with coins, that you can use 10 or 20 cent coins, but only up to $5 in value for using of coins. So, you know, another thing to be aware of. You can use 50 cent coins, but only up to $10. And one or two dollar coins, but you can only pay up to $100. Another thing that we're often faced with, can a retailer charge me a fee for using PayWave or credit card? Mm. Well, yes, they can, but they must tell you that in advance. So it's one of the other things to consider. And retailers should offer a payment method that doesn't include a surcharge. So they need to tell you in advance and how much they're going to be charging, and it needs to be another option for that. And the last area is, can I make a payment by check? Well, in fact, no, you can't. If the checks are now not legal tender in New Zealand, and in 2021, the banks withdrew availability for checks, and in 2024 they stopped accepting foreign checks. So if you receive payment by check, then you need to go back to the person who's issued that and get them to make another payment, way of paying that. So, Wendy, I'm going to hand over to you.
Well, thank you, Denise. So, as I said before, I'm talking about the Child Support Act this morning. Now, this came into effect in 1991, known as the Child Support Act, and it's a New Zealand law that establishes a system for financial support of children whose parents are separated or not living together. The Act outlines how child support payments are calculated, collected and enforced, primarily through the Inland Revenue Department, we'll call it IRD. The Act aims to ensure children receive financial support from both parents, regardless of their living arrangements. So just a little bit of back history on it. Some of you might remember, didn't it used to be the liable parent contribution? Well, it was. That was before the Act came into being in 1991. So there were two systems. There was the liable parent contribution scheme. That was for beneficiaries and the making of maintenance orders or agreements for those not receiving benefits when it came to child support. The liable parent contribution scheme was used when the custodian of the child was a beneficiary, while maintenance orders or agreements were established when the custodian was not a beneficiary, so that parent was working. Now, these two systems aimed to ensure financial support for children following parental separation. So some key aspects of the Child Support Act, back to 1991 now. Now, the purpose was to provide a framework for child support and domestic maintenance payments, ensuring children receive financial support from both parents, whether they live together or not. How it was calculated? It was typically calculated based on a formula that considers the income of both parents and the amount of time each parent spends caring for the child. And often it was an area of a lot of disagreement, a lot of disharmony between the two parents concerned. Collection and payment. IRD is responsible for collecting child support payments and distributing them to the parent who is entitled to receive them. The Act includes provisions for enforcing child support payments, including penalties for non-payment, and the ability for the IRD to take action, such as deduction notices or referring the matter to the family court. I'll come back to that in a moment or two. Types of agreements. Now, there's three. Child support can be arranged through various methods, including a private agreement that's between the two parents where they both agree on a sum. IRD is not involved in that. There's a voluntary agreement that's registered with IRD and a formula assessment where the IRD calculates the amount or court orders. That's sort of that's the last stop. Now, the Act has been amended over time, such as the Child Support Amendment Act 2021, which simplified penalty rules and introduced compulsory deductions. There's an international aspect also included in the Act when it covers situations where one parent lives in Australia and provides for situations where parents live outside of both New Zealand and Australia. So in essence, the Child Support Act aims to ensure children receive the financial support they need from both parents, even when those parents are separated or not living together. So how does Inland Revenue calculate child support? So it calculates the amount to be paid using a formula assessment. If you have to pay child support, you're called the liable parent. I think it's not. I think they could have chosen a better name, but that's just my opinion. The other parent is called the receiving carer. For a child to be covered by the scheme, a qualifying child, they must be a New Zealand citizen or an ordinary resident. The Child Support Act covers child maintenance arrangements for family living in New Zealand and families where one of the parents lives in Australia. However, you may be able to get child support under the Family Proceedings Act 1980 if you or the other parent lives outside of New Zealand and Australia. There's lots of information on the website, Inland Revenue website, about child support. So there's plenty of information out there. So back to the types of child support arrangements. So as I said, there are three ways of making these support arrangements. First one, you can make a private agreement with your ex-partner where you both agree on the amount and frequency of child support payments. You then organise payments and resolve issues between yourselves. You don't need to have a formal document for this agreement, and it's not registered with Inland Revenue, so it's perhaps a more gentler way of going about it and initiating it. And if you've got a good relationship and everything's harmonious, shall we say, then that arrangement works quite well. You can make a more formal voluntary agreement with your ex-partner, which is a written child support agreement that is registered with Inland Revenue. You and your ex-partner agree on the amount, but Inland Revenue takes care of collecting and paying the money, as well as following up on missed payments. Now, third one, Inland Revenue can make a formula assessment if you and your partner can't agree on the arrangements. And often there is a lot of disharmony here, so this is where IRD come in and they make the decision. Inland Revenue will calculate the amount to be paid. If the child support isn't paid, Inland Revenue can ask the family court to enforce payments. So that's sort of a step that you don't really want to take if you don't have to. Now, if you disagree with Inland Revenue about child support, you should try and sort it out with them first. Make the department the first port of call. They do have an 0800 number, and hopefully you'll be able to get a response, without too much of a delay. Or they do have a website, and the website explains how to make your objection. Or you can write to Inland Revenue explaining why you disagree with its decision or your assessment.
And Wendy, this would include if circumstances change?
Very much so, Denise, very much so. It's historically, if you've got a change in circumstances, let them know. Then you're not going to be hit with anything that you're not expecting down the track. Mm. So keep them informed. always be transparent. And normally you find that it becomes, you know, the process becomes a, you know, well, as simplified as it can be, and it just becomes an expectation that that amount's going to be deducted from the liable parent's wage, then goes to the receiving parent, and hopefully it, you know, the process goes as it should. And it makes it easier for everybody, because often the children get caught up in all this too. Yeah,
and this is often where people come to us where circumstances have changed.
Oh, for sure.
Either by the receiving parent or by the liable parent,
yes,
where one has increased in salary or decreased in salary.
All that. And it, it's not always easy. So when does the family court get involved? Now just here, I'll just make a mention of a people in the family court called, we call them kaiārahi, and the other name is that they're a family court navigator. Now, we do refer clients to these people quite often, don't we? Because they are excellent at helping people who are perhaps new to the family court in navigating your way through the different processes. And I've often made a referral, and they're very, very good. And it just helps. Doesn't simplify it, maybe, but it just helps to get through. Because it can seem at first rather daunting, not complicated, but rather thinking, oh gosh, it's how do you go through it?
Yes, I often use the term of that they really handhold, don't they?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes. They're very,
have you
very
used
good.
Those, Diana?
No, I haven't used them. No,
they're very good, and they're just an excellent resource, just an extra resource. Yes. Really, really good. So when does the family court get involved? So in some cases, you can ask the family court for help when you're concerned about child support. The family court can become involved if you're unhappy about how much Inland Revenue is telling you or the other person to pay, and Inland Revenue has already done a review. You're not paying your child support, and Inland Revenue has asked the court to make sure you do. Now, the family court can also hear appeals of decisions the Commissioner of Inland Revenue has made, have payments calculated in a different way by making a departure order, declare that a person is a step-parent of a child, change the formula assessment for a child, order lump sum payments, change lump sum payments or any court order that changed an assessment, cancel any voluntary agreements, enforce payments under the Child Support Act of 1991. So that gives a bit of an overview of how it usually runs, and for the most part, it functions quite well. And bear in mind that child support can continue up until the child is 18, and that's if they're still at school. But also, too, that there has to be an eligibility criteria, and everyone has to meet those. Some very good links to look at if you'd like more information, and that's Inland Revenue, IRD, IRD, GOVT, government.nz, and look at child support information. And there's plenty there to look at, and just to go over it again, you know, when you've got the time and you're able to, and it helps to helps you to decipher a lot of the information. So we'll leave it at there, Denise.
Thanks, Wendy.
Okay.
And Diana, have you got anything that you'd like to add today?
Well, I had a couple of clients last week who were having trouble filling in electronic forms. And sometimes this is because they don't have a computer at home. They're only working off a mobile phone, which is very hard to fill in a form. And also attaching documents that need to be attached to the form has been quite challenging, knowing what sort of documents to attach and how to even attach them has been challenging for some of our clients. So we've worked through those in the last week, and perhaps that's a whole other topic for another day.
And a very interesting topic, because I had somebody in the Bureau on Friday afternoon, and they had just discovered that in applying for a Real Me, and they were trying to do it through their Apple phone, and it's not compatible.
Oh, gosh.
So, a whole new topic for another day.
A whole new topic, and I think it's becoming a lot of people out there are starting to feel a bit excluded from being able to go and talk face-to-face to someone or having help with filling in a form on just a piece of paper form. It's not so easy anymore. So.
I think it's becoming increasingly difficult to actually talk to somebody, like somebody real.
Yes.
Get messages and callbacks. It's,
yeah. Yes, so a topic for another day.
Indeed. All right, well.
Thanks, Denise and Wendy.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Keep warm, ladies, and we'll see you all here again next month.
Next month.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye for now.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.